Hello and welcome to the Wolves Report. I'm Ryan Lester and thank you for joining us for episode 96. Tonight we'll analyse the match and players from Wolves 2-2 draw with Forest. Take your questions, some great questions tonight, and look ahead to Arsenal. Regular team back this evening. Delighted to have our director of football, Chris Tyler, and our club captain, Mark Knock. If you think Matt Doherty struggled playing out of position, wait until you see Tyler try and fill Keith Hackett's boots. Going back to the weekend, boys, you boys are both at Forest. Tyler, give me your take on Nottingham Forest 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 2.
Well, yeah, once we'd gotten to the ground through knocking, meeting all of his fan club outside, I think he spoke to Nira and a Febby Balls fan on the way in, to be honest.
He's gone like that, man.
I don't know. I think we had different opinions. Nocky sort of came out saying he enjoyed the game and I thought it was two poor teams, really, on the day. I don't think there was much Premier League quality on show. It was eventful and it was, you know, incident-packed, but I think there were two players on the pitch with quality, and that was Gibbs White for them and Kuna for us. And they were the only two, really, that, you know, showed they had the ability to be at this level week in, week out. I thought everyone else was poor. We seem a bit obsessed again with, I was saying to Nocky, we seem to be a bit obsessed again with backwards and sideways football. And I know that's probably because where we are at the moment, squad selection-wise, and we've had to change the way we play and manage it differently. But too much safe possession for me in our own third, and that was a negative for me. The one thing, you know, we've talked about all season, you can't knock, is the players' effort and commitment and desire and will to get a result. You know, that was clearly on show. But yeah, I thought it was almost like your old man called it, knock on the way home, almost like a bit of a championship game feel about it, I thought, with two teams almost having a go at each other and just lacking that bit of quality that I think you expect in this level now. And like I said, they were the only two players on the pitch for me that looked like they warranted being in a Premier League game. But you take a point, you know, bit of a free hit now, isn't it, between now and the end of the season. I think, again, Nocky and myself called it, we feared the season would peter out, and that's certainly starting to be the case now. And I'd probably start giving the kids a bit of a run, really. Let's have another look at those guys and see if they've got anything about them for next season. But to summarise, eventful day. Kuna's goal was worth the admission fee alone. And yeah, had a couple of beers before the game with Nocky and his fan club, so it was all right.
Nocky, Tyler makes a really fair point in terms of safe possession, backwards and sideways. But would you say that's more of a result of the players in positions going forward? Because no disrespect to Sarabia or Doherty, you're not going to be able to play the through balls in behind because they're not going to get them. So the only way, really, unless you could get a bit of magic from Kuna, which Wolves did, was to try and keep recycling the ball, because those percentage balls, Doherty's not going to get in behind, Sarabia's not going to get in behind. So are we once again falling victim to a limited squad?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, you've got to play to your strengths, haven't you? And we didn't have a lot of pace in there. And I know Kuna, you know, scored an absolute wonder goal, but you could tell he's not fit. I mean, I think he was probably on 70% of what he's capable of, and which is quite frightening based on the goal. But the most of the first half, he was very deep. Sarabia was playing ahead of him. He was holding the ball, keeping possession, and just playing those simple passes, just trying to be in the game but not overextend himself. So, look, we know where we are with the squad. We know that the depth just isn't there. And as Chris said, we kind of anticipated that the season might just peter out. And it's probably why I actually enjoyed the game, because I went there with no real expectation. I just went there to watch a football match. And I was entertained, you know. I thought there was some needle in it. You know, we gave it to Gibbs White. He gave it us back. There's no issue with that for me. You know, scored a wonder goal and saw a goal right in front of us as well. So it was a good occasion. It was a good day out. That's kind of what it felt like, because there wasn't really a great deal on the game. It was bigger for them than it was for us. But I was expecting them to put us under a bit more pressure than they did. I thought they'd start really strongly and try and peg us back and try and hit us down the wide areas, but they never really did that. I thought we were relatively composed and controlled. And I think it's one of the frustrations of the last sort of four or five games. If we'd have had a thicker squad and we had more options available, I'm pretty convinced we win that game, and we probably win a couple of the others as well. So to answer your initial question, yeah, we're paying the price for a small squad, but it's it's not the first time we've had to pay that price. And unfortunately, we don't really seem to be learning from our mistakes in that area.
With the limited options around us, Tyler, is there much more Gary could have done, or is that pretty much as he could have done, really? Because I always thought Wolves had a chance on Saturday, but as Nocky mentioned then, I thought Forest would have wanted that bit more because they've probably got a bit more to play for now. But even with what Wolves had, they still managed to get a point from the game.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest frustration, isn't it? Like Nocky just said, we've only got like two or three injuries. It's not like we've been decimated with 10, 11, 12 injuries. And that's the biggest, you know, frustration, really. And Hugo Bueno for Doherty maybe could have been one that you think would have been a natural
place. My pace.
I've been fairly critical of Bueno. I think he probably would benefit from, you know, regular football somewhere else, but I thought he was very good when he came on. But apart from that, I think O'Neill said he had 12 outfield players to choose the 10 from. So he's gone with what he thinks. You know, Doherty will probably be a bit more solid potentially, but I think that's the only thing he probably could have done differently. You know, like I said, Kuhn is nowhere near 100% fit. Hwang had 20 minutes in him. Dawson obviously needs an operation by the looks of it, so he can't play. And you sort of are where you are. And we keep flogging the same players, don't we? And, you know, I think they're starting to look a bit leggy, aren't they? Gomez, Lamina. Again, Boubacar Traoré, right? Maybe time to see him. Like, why not give him a run of games now, between now and the end of the season? See what he's got about him, see if he's a genuine player for us next year. But no, I don't think he could have done much more. And, you know, he admitted himself, like I said, that to be at this level and have 12 players to choose from is borderline negligent, isn't it, really?
You are watching and listening episode 96 of the Wolves Report. As always, the first bit of this show, well, the whole show, is broadcast live and is available to watch back on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and then uploaded to Spotify. Love seeing your comments come through, loads coming through already. As I mentioned, you can comment on all the social media platforms other than Spotify on the live section when we can get some of them up. Comments, interactions, decent insults, we'll get them all up to have a go. Nocky, when you'd finish feeding your fan base autographs and free gifts, I hope you made it back in time to see the goal. But one of the moments of probably in recent weeks, and probably one of our contenders for goal of the season, someone that's probably still only 75-80% produced a world-class goal.
I think Tyler's over-egging the fan base thing. They were there for him, not me. No, look, it was an absolutely fantastic goal. There was nothing on. He just bowled it out, just gave me, I think he was just trying to get us up the pitch, really. He was the only option, so we bowled it out to him. He got himself forward and he just kept going and going and going, and no one could get near him, no one could put a tackle on him, so he just kept manoeuvring himself forward. And then, you know, to have that quality to just dink the ball between the two players and then rifle it in the top corner like that, that's just phenomenal. And that's what we've been missing. You know, we were really at our best this season when we had him, Neto and Hwang, and we were really firing on all cylinders. And you can see the difference it makes just having that top class, you know, borderline world-class striker playing for you, because we've had some kids playing up there. We've tried different people in different positions, but he was just more deadly, more organised, more dangerous in those areas than the rest of them have been altogether, unfortunately. And that's the difference in quality. That's why you can't afford to lose those kind of players at this level. So it was a top class goal, and I think with the second as well, it's probably slightly understated because it's a tap in, but again, he's read where the ball's going to go. He's got himself into a position and he's finished it. So it was a really good performance by a player who I think is nowhere near his best at the moment.
Absolutely. There's a natural thing that some players can't teach in terms of poaching, right place, right time. And we all agreed on here a while ago that Cunha wasn't that number nine. Maybe he's not an out-and-out number nine, but he certainly looks like a goal scorer now. Picking a goal up he shouldn't score and then being in the right place for a scrambly tap-in, which turned out to be a really important goal for us. But Tyler, I want to move on to the Forest equaliser. I particularly want to speak to you about it because I know we're on different sides of the argument. There's been some really interesting stuff and debates. I don't know how you let someone that's 5'2" manage to muscle his way in and score a good header, because if you get in that position, it's a good header. So I have to respect that. And as Nocky said, give it, take it. So fair play. If it's the other way around, I'd certainly be doing it. So I've got no issue with that. It's all part of football. But we are on slightly different sides of the bed with this. Now, anywhere else on the pitch, if it's seen in play and two hands go into someone's back, that's a free kick. But you're of a different opinion and you think it's a good goal.
I just don't think there's enough there to warrant it disallowing a goal. I can't come on here one week and say I want to see goals scored and entertainment and I don't want goals to be ruled out and then come on and say, oh, we should rule that goal out. For me, just defend it better. The feeling inside the ground was at the time just one of frustration. Like, you know, not we have to work so hard to get a lead, to get in front, and then we let Morgan Gibbs-White score from a header, from a corner. I mean, two hands on his back or not, it, for me, it's still inexcusable. If you don't clear the first ball, and then how it's bounced in over Sarr as well, it's just a horrible goal to concede. But no, I'm on the fence of allowing goals unless, you know, it's an absolute rick. And I just didn't class that in that category, to be honest. I think fair game. If that was a Wolves goal and it ruled out, I'd be absolutely fuming. So,
okay, to bring you back on that example then, last week we stood there, well, we didn't, the official stood there, overanalyzing a goal with an inch of its life with no common sense played. So if we're doing it one week and those are the rules, why aren't we doing it the next week? Because I know we all agreed last week you probably shouldn't. By the letter of law, he's offside, but common sense, as Keith said, he's not a 15-foot octopus. He's not going to get to it. So the goal should have stood. So if they're analysing it that much one week, because I genuinely believe they've missed that, you know, I don't even think they've checked it and they've seen it.
Probably not.
And it's come to light. But Tyler, if
you want them doing that, Ryan, do you want them analysing every single goal? How long do you want them to analyse it for? A minute? 2 minutes?
Yeah, well,
you've just got to draw the line. I get what you're saying, and I agree. We've talked about it 100 times. There's no consistency in what they do. They're in a muddle, aren't they? They don't know what they're doing. But for me, you can't be looking at goals and looking for reasons to rule them out. That, for me, isn't the football game that I fell in love with, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, what's frustrating for me is because, I'll bring you into this as well, Nocky. How many times do we see a ball bounce on the halfway line and it goes up and you see one of the players just get tempted and give the player a nudge? The slightest two hands in anybody's back, anywhere on the pitch, it's always a free kick. Always a free kick, even more so if you're doing it in and around the box. So I don't think they checked it. I don't think it should be a goal. Maybe I'm being a little bit biased. Tyler's right, we want the game to flow more. But equally, we want consistency. If you put two hands in someone's back in a football match, and it's the player that scores the goal, it's a foul.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Chris in the sense that you don't want to see goals ruled out for that. But then at the same time, goals are being ruled out for that. And I think my frustration with it is initially, I don't think it should have been a corner from our position. It looked pretty clear to me that the lad had handballed it. And then when the corner does come in, there is two hands and he's pushed him. I think Semedo's not helped himself because he stayed on his feet. If he goes flat on his flat on the face, then...
Should he have to roll on the floor, though?
You shouldn't, but you do. And that's the reality of it. If you have a tackle in the penalty area, you don't hit the deck, you don't get the penalty. It's as simple as that. So, you know, you stay on your feet, you punish yourself. But I think that the frustrating thing for me is that there's not a chance in hell to check that. And the reason being is after our equaliser, they went into granular detail to try and disallow that goal. And you knew it was happening because he didn't, you know, he delayed the restart. So there's no way he would have done that for our goal if he's checking it. If he would have done it for their goal, if he wasn't checking it. So you can clearly see he's just not, they've not even looked at it. They've obviously missed it. And if they do check it, I think even though you don't want to see goals chalked off for that, I think they disallow it because it's two hands in the back and it's a push. Worst case scenario, they send him over to the monitor to go and have a look at it. So for me, they've missed it. And that's the frustrating thing. If we're going to have one set of rules, it's got to be one set of rules for everyone. You look at some of the penalties we've given away, the touch at Sheffield United when Fabio's barely touched him, he's gone over. We've had two or three of them this season where there's been minimum contact and it's resulted in a penalty. So it's got to work both ways. It's got to be consistent. So that touch there is probably heavier than any of the penalties we've given away this season, and he hasn't been pulled up for it. So it's the consistent element of it. Whether it's the right thing for football or not, it's the rules that we're all supposed to be playing to at the moment, and it doesn't feel like we get our fair share of those at the minute. It seems like we're on the receiving end as opposed to gaining the benefit.
Absolutely, and as always, I repeat, I don't want any favours. I don't want any wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll level it up. I don't want that. I just want the same level of officiating consistently delivered throughout the season, and we've not had that. Like the Cunha goal, the equaliser for 2-2, there's like, what are we looking for here? And you're just saying, what's going on? That gives what equaliser? Yeah, it's a goal. And like, I just don't, come on, guys. You brought VAR in, use it properly. If you're going to use it the same every week and don't pick and choose when you're going to overanalyze, as someone said, being super forensic with goals or not at all. You either do it with all of them or you do it with none of them. And that's the most frustrating thing. But
I didn't see it at the time. And I mean, you know, we were behind the goal, diagonally in line with it, and I didn't see anything at all wrong with the actual goal itself. I thought, as I said, I don't think the corner should have been a corner. So you can kind of forgive the referee for not seeing that because of all the things that are going on, all the motions, all the movements, and the things he has to assess and check. But that, you just need your VAR to be looking at that and seeing it. And for them not to have seen that push and at least had a look at it, if they have a look at it and deemed it's not, you know, it's not a clear and obvious error, then fine, and no problem for me. But I just think they missed it, and that's the frustrating thing.
It is frustrating. And then from being 1-1, Tyler, Wolves found themselves 2-1 down, and I've got a feeling they could probably do better with that defensively for that second goal.
Well, I think the majority of their attacks came from Wolves' errors, really. They didn't play through us at any point. They didn't get in behind us, really. It was always us giving the ball away. And it's what I came on to about the safe possession. We were having it in our own third, and we were very happy to play, you know, risky football at times, and that's the bit I didn't understand. And obviously, we give the ball away. I mean, there's a bit of luck involved, isn't there? Doherty makes fairly decent tackle, really. It bounces and bobbles and goes straight to their striker and in, and good luck on their part and bad luck on our part. But it should never be in the situation where they get the chance to score the goal anyway. And you know, we talked about it the other week. We're having to score goals to have any chance in games. We're not defensively good enough at the moment. I think it's 5 clean sheets all season. We let in such soft goals in, set pieces. You know, teams aren't having to work hard to score against us, and that's a concern, really. And, you know, like we said, we've had to score a wonder goal, and then we've let in a goal from a corner and a goal like that, which is Sunday league, isn't it, really? So something needs to change at the back, but I think we'll probably come on to it later with the squad size again. It's a very comfortable team, isn't it? And, you know, I think it comes down to players not having pressure on them. Kilman, Toti, they know they're going to start week in, week out, and they need to be performing at a better level, I think. And we need to start getting some clean sheets because we're shipping goals every game now, and they're not good goals we're letting in.
Yeah, and again, Tyler, I would come back to say that if the ball keeps coming back again and again and again, no matter who you're playing, eventually they're going to get chances. So if you're lacking quality that can hold the ball up or take the ball left and right, wave after wave, like it did against Coventry, the ball will keep coming back and eventually they will wear you down because it's impossible to defend like that. So thin squad, lack of quality options, and eventually it's going to expose a defence that looks a little bit brittle at the moment. Okay, that wasn't the end of the scoring, though. It got to 2-2. We've talked about Cooney a bit already, but right place, right time, and nice for a goal to be scored, and a good celebration in front of the away end as well.
Yeah, it was nice. You kind of felt there was another goal in the game. I thought there'd be a winner as well, to be honest, because it did seem relatively open. But he's in the right place at the right time. Huang was around there as well. And he battled for it and he's poked it in, hasn't he? I think me and Chris had the discussion on the way home that you can score an absolute worldie and you can score a tapping like that and they're both worth exactly the same. It's just a real scrappy goal, but it's one we needed. And I think had we had a little bit more on the bench at that point, they were struggling. I mean, after the first goal, we felt that Forest had gone. You know, there was a real opportunity there for us. And if we hold it till half time, I do think we'd probably go on and win that game. So if we'd have had a little bit of quality on the bench to bring on, we'd probably go on and win the game. But he's took it well. He's celebrating in front of us. And it's really important to get that player scoring goals again, because I think he's up to 11 now for the season. And he's a top class player. And, you know, to have him scoring goals and celebrating and enjoying his football in front of us is, you know, it's worth the admission for.
Yeah, hopefully he gets his badge and circle celebration on FIFA next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was, because it seems to have been, well, amongst our fan base, it's certainly popular and it's annoying everybody else. So, yeah, good stuff from him. Ended 2-2. I'd probably have to say Forest were probably more likely to probably win the game in the end, but that's a natural sort of, naturally how you're expecting the team to regress as the quality goes off. The ball and Forest and Morgan will have more and more of the ball, but I don't think it was a result they were particularly happy with, but I think we'd have probably taken a draw considering our limited options. And even with a 75-80% Cunha fit, we still would give them a good game with, in particular, that really good goal. Moving on to the players, Tyler. Jose Sarr's performance, could he have done better with that first goal?
Yeah. No, I think he did okay. I think all round it was pretty good, but he'll be disappointed himself with that goal, I would have thought. It's not got much power on it.
I don't think he's expecting Gibbs White to win the header. Yeah. I think he's left flat-footed and he's just not expecting that to happen.
And the bounce looked a little bit dodgy as well, didn't it? It wasn't, you know, it seemed uneven, but he made a... I saw someone say excellent saves. I thought all the saves he made, again, were fairly routine, really. But I thought he did okay. You know, he was pretty good on the ball. When we were trying to play from the back, I think he made two or three saves second half. But like I said, they're saves I'd expect him to make 100 times out of 100, really. So he'll be disappointed with the goal, but... You know, we are where we are, aren't we? He did well. He did okay. I thought he had an all right game.
Now, Nocky and Tyler talked to me this and put it on the group chat before the game as well. It looked like a back four to start with, although it changed in the second half. It looked to me like Toti was left back to start the game. Kilman left centre back. Santiago Bueno centre and Nelson on the right. But the way they set up, sometimes it sort of switches backwards and forwards. So, but regardless, I think Toti was okay, but yeah, just your take on the centre-backs, Nocco.
Yeah, we play kind of a hybrid, don't we? We can play with a four if we're attacking. We can drop back into a three to make it solid. So I don't think there's a rigid formation for us at the minute. I think they can evolve it as the game's developing, really, in the situation. I thought the centre-halves were okay. Not as commanding as I would like, and we're conceding a lot of soft goals at the moment. There seems to be a lot of space between our centre-halves at the moment for people to play in. And we've kind of lost that shield in front of them, it feels, at the moment with Lamina and Gomez. It's just the unit isn't working the way that we want it to. I don't think anyone was particularly poor. I just think that as a unit, they weren't very efficient.
Yeah.
And, you know, we conceded silly goal. I think is it like three out of the last four have been set pieces, which you have to look at your defensive players for that because they're the ones you want commanding those areas. So they were okay. But, you know, we've conceded two. On a regular basis now, we just seem to be conceding a lot of goals. So although individually they're doing okay, you can't, you know, it's not sustainable to keep conceding this amount of goals.
Yeah, I think in the Premier League is absolutely brutal. If you concede half a chance, give Gibbs White half a yard, whether he's pushed or not, he's made the yard. And then for the equaliser, the ball's bounced through, it's sloppy. You give a team, even if they're a bottom third team, like Forest, a chance, it's a goal. And that's the Premier League. It is absolutely brutal. Nelson Semedo, Tyler and Matt Doherty, two very different performances. I mean, I'm feeling sorry for Nelson a bit because he wasn't very good, but this is a guy that's been really good all season, probably had his best season for Wolves, been defensively very good. To me, that looked like a footballer that was absolutely knackered. He looked like he had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, no, we were talking a lot about him first half, Mendoc, about how, you know, his game is so consistent now that you're probably expecting those better performances from him. He didn't have a bad game for me, any stretch of the imagination.
Just one hot cross, dodgy pass, other than that, he was fine.
Yeah, and when he gets in good positions again, it's that lack of vulnerable. There was a great chance first half. But he'd done the hard work, got in such a good position, and then just floats it into the keeper's hands. And they're the bits that you do get frustrated at because you want him to be better in those areas, but you can't criticise him too much. I think he's 7 out of 10 every week at the moment, isn't he? You know, and you know,
good. I'd go as far as saying he's in contention for player of the season. I'd say he's got exactly
the same thing. And you know, Hudson-Odoi is a tricky customer, and again, kept him quiet, didn't have a kick really. So that's what I mean. He's starting to have those performances where you're noticing him a bit more now if he's not at those extreme levels that he's sometimes at. But I thought he was good. And as for Doherty, did what was asked of him. You know, very uncomfortable on that side first half, trying to play those balls. And he got a couple of them wrong and put us in trouble a couple of times. But he's playing left wing back and he lacks pace. He lacks mobility, as we know. And he hasn't got a left foot. So what are you expecting?
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me because as much as... And I know he's gone off the boil since he broke into the team under Steve Davis, but Hugo Bueno, just purely because he's left-footed and he's 10 times quicker than Matt Doherty, just for that burst of pace, so when you get forward, you've got a chance of getting there. That just felt to me like such a natural choice to have someone that's reasonable on the ball. He can definitely cross a football and he's got a bit of pace and he's not afraid to drop a lollipop in and go past somebody. Matt Doherty, I think you put him in a position there when he started off midfield. As you just said then, Tyler, perfectly, you're exposing everything that he hasn't got. He hasn't got pace, he hasn't got mobility, and he hasn't got a left foot. And he looked so lost. And he did his best, absolutely no problem at all. But he just looked completely out of sorts on that side of the pitch. Nocky, moving to the centre midfield. I think it was Tommy Doyle and Mario Lemina to start with Gomez a bit further up. So we'll start with Tommy Doyle and Mario Lemina.
I thought Lemina looked a bit leggy. I think he's played a lot of football. He's catching up with him a little bit. Wasn't his dominant self, and I think that was maybe due to the fact that he wasn't playing directly with Gomez. Gomez was a little bit further forward and a little bit more fluid. So we know those two are at their best when they're playing, you know, directly in line with each other. Doyle, I think I saw a different version of Tommy Doyle than other people did, because a lot of people seem to say that he had a really, really strong game. I thought he was poor. I thought his distribution was poor. I don't think he controlled the midfield at all, and I thought he gave it away on a few occasions. So not one of his better games. But as I said, similar to the centre-halves, he didn't do anything particularly wrong. It just wasn't a very controlled and dominant performance in your midfield, such a key area in a game like that. But Lemina was probably the stronger of the two, but again, he just looks very leggy at the moment.
What was strange to me, Nocky, was the week before we saw Mario and Jay, which is no doubt Wolves' best pairing, and I think we get our better performances. And even when the games were poor, we've got more control with those two. Them two being put together or strengthens Wolves, but when they're apart, it weakens Wolves. But I actually thought Tommy Doyle did all right in that hybrid position last week. Although he's not quick, he got into those attacking areas, he got wide. And I just don't think there was a need to tweak it. I know horses for courses, Forest are a different team, but it was strange for me to see Joe Gomez higher up in there. He just, I know he's trying to do things and the sort of the season's filtering out a little bit. So it was just strange to me.
I think he's a bit of a conundrum, isn't he? Because you know your centre midfield pairs are going to be Lemina and Gomez. There's going to be your two. So we're going to sign him because at the price he is, you know, you'd be mad not to sign him. But it's where do you play him? And I still think he's maybe planning a little bit more towards next season as to what his best position is. So he's trying him out in different areas, because it is going to be a problem, because I think we'll sign him. And if everybody's fit for me, he doesn't play. So you've got to sell the club to him in that sense that he needs to know he's going to get football. So I just think they're trying to work an area for him to play at the moment. And it's a little bit of a struggle because he's not really excelling in any position we're putting him in.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure Jair Gomez, as much as I love him, is a number 10 either. And while we're on the subject of Jair Gomez, Tyler, one of his quieter games, but I'm not really expecting this lad to be. I know you do underrate him on the ball, and he has got like a couple of goals and he can find a pass, but this isn't someone for me that should be playing as an advanced midfielder.
No, I don't think so. And I'd have done the same as you, that I'd have kept the two and then give Doyle a free rate. In Doyle's defence, and it's the same argument for Sarabia, you know, his game is about making other players look better. Tom Adul's game is about getting on the ball, spinning and playing a Neto in, playing a Kuna in. He hasn't got that option at the moment. You know, he's looking up and there's nobody to pass it to. So in his defence, I think you have to have that. Gomez was fine. Again, I think he's starting to be a bit leggy. And I think because of his levels of performances, we forget how young he is. We forget it's his first full season in this country. You're expecting big things from him every week that you're not going to get, are you? And didn't put a foot wrong, nothing bad, but yeah, just not one of his better games. Didn't really get into it as much as he normally would, but maybe that's because he was a bit out of position, certainly first half. So no criticism from me. He's a young lad still learning his trade in the toughest place to do it.
Absolutely. We've got a question about Pablo Sarabia, so I'm not going to go too much on him, but when you start off with like four in midfield and one wide player is Pablo Sarabia and the other is Matt Doherty, I don't think the Forest fullbacks would have had an easier game all season. Again, what's Matt Doherty supposed to do playing there? Pablo Sarabia, there's clearly magic in that left foot, but when you're playing out wide, we've said it since he joined, Tyler, that the further wide you the wider he plays, the less effective. He can have no impact on the game because he's not going to beat anybody from there. So yeah.
I'll have to survive with that till as long as I've got a hole you know where, because it's a sympathy. It's pointless play. It's almost pointless playing him there. There's no other. And I've seen him get criticism. He's not, honestly, I just don't understand it. He's not your player that's going to go smashing into people and winning tackles. He's a bit of a luxury player. And there's an argument to say, can we afford a luxury player? But especially at the moment, we've got no choice. There's nothing else there. And he put another good delivery in for the goal. His stats and his numbers this season, goal contribution wise, are the same as Pedro Neto's. You're talking about selling one of them for £70-80 million, and the other one I've seen described as a bag of cement. So, you do the math. I think it's a bit similar to the Doyle one. At the way we're playing at the moment, with the lack of pace and flair and creativity, he's not going to look.
Yeah, we've got a good question on him, so we'll save a bit more for him after that. Nocky, last but not least. The player ratings, Matheus Cunha, still not fully fit, but he drops in a goal, one of Wolves' goals of the season, and scrambles one home for the equaliser. Probably didn't do a lot, but Wolves are such a different side with him in the team.
Yeah, he was pretty quiet throughout the whole game, in all honesty. He was obviously, we know where he is. He's 65-70% fit at the moment. So he was playing a lot deeper. He was trying to dictate play a little bit, almost playing like a false nine, little bit deeper than that, maybe even as an eight. But he had two moments where he came alive for us. The first goal was absolutely superb. You wouldn't know it if you didn't watch Match of the Day, because they don't talk about it at all, which has really wound me up for some reason. I don't know why.
Let it go, Knocker. Let it go, sir. Let it go.
And the second one is Johnny on the spot, isn't he? Other than that, he's not done a great deal because he's probably not fit. But he got, you know, plenty of minutes. What was it, 70-odd minutes? So it's only going to work for him. And you can just see the quality that lad's got. He's arguably our, along with Aitnuri, probably our most important player. So it's great to have him fit.
Absolutely. Just before we move on to some of the questions, the squad as a whole, I think you said it at the start of the show, Nocky, these guys are all playing for each other and they're all playing for the manager. They all come off and they're absolutely done. Some of the players are done at 60 minutes, 70 minutes. I mean, I'm no sports scientist, but I know people are talking about the red zone at the moment. If I had to bet, I'd say half that team should be doing with a break right now, but we can't afford the luxury because we don't have that. Now, there are several reasons for that, but equally, are those injuries all that? I mean, there's players in midfield that look absent. Mario Lemina looks a shadow himself. He looks absolutely knackered. Nelson Semedo, incredible, just looks really tired. So I don't know how long Wolves are going to get away with it for. Again, I think I'm sneaking into one of the questions from later on, but I want to give credit to the whole team for the way they apply themselves week in, week out. They don't give up. They don't always play well, but this is a bunch of players that are playing for our badge and they're very much playing for the manager. And I appreciate that. It's not going to be good and they can't help it if they're knackered. So, yeah, you know what? Credit to them, because you come away from the game. You can't really complain about anybody because they've all given a lot. And I don't know if you two think the same as that, but I've got no complaints with the effort and application. I just think we're getting to the end of the season and there's some very, very tired footballers.
I agree entirely, but there is a huge knock-on effect to a small squad. And I think we've spoken briefly about Sarabia. I know we're going to go into detail on him a little bit later, but he's paid the price more than anyone else for the injuries we've had. Because when we had, you go back probably just around before Christmas, when we were really looking like a good side, he had options all around him. He had players to play off. He was able to drift into different positions and affect the game. And he can't do that now. He's having to be more rigid because of those injuries. And it's the same with your Laminas. You're losing those 10-15%. And yeah, I've got no criticism about the squad at all in what they're doing and the effort they're putting in. But the reality is the decisions that we've made have taken us out of the FA Cup earlier than we should have been out of it. And they've ended our European campaign. And in essence, they've ended our season as well. So yes, you've got to be, you know, it's a pat on the back for the players and the management team to get us at 43 points this stage of the season is a phenomenal achievement. But also you've got to be a little bit frustrated that we're not higher up the division, because we absolutely should be if those decisions were perhaps a little bit different.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I go back to the decision to loan out Fabio Silva and Sasa Kalajic. Fabio, I'm not sure he'll ever play for Wolves again. And I mean, he's not even playing well in Scotland. And I don't mean that disrespectful to Scottish football, but it's a two-team league and he's struggling to have a knock-on. Sasha scored two match-winning goals. But to let these guys out with nothing and no disrespect, because he might become a good footballer, but to then leave that on Nathan Fraser, he's such, I don't know who's made that call, but it's such a bad judgment call to put someone in like that. I mean, you could have really damaged Nathan Fraser with this, because it just feels harsh to put him in. And you know what? He had a couple of good games in the cup, but he looks like a season-long loan away from being in contention, at least. He looks like he needs regular football. So, yeah, there's been some interesting decisions and hopefully Wolves learn from that. And I think Jeff did allude to that sort of learning from that. But equally, we've not learned since Raul got injured. So I'm not sure we're going to start learning now. You are listening and watching episode 96 of the Wolves Report with Chris Tyler, Mark Knock and myself, Ryan Lester. As always, we're beaming the show out live. You can watch back on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and then eventually Spotify as well. Please give us a like or a follow on those social pages to help continue the growth of the show. Let's move on to some questions. We're on Pablo Sarabia, so let's keep talking about Pablo Sarabia. Richard asked, the thin squad means Sarabia is a luxury player we can't afford to play and a luxury we cannot afford to play without. We cannot afford to play, not to play. So, Nocky, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head there. And I've said this for a little while as well. This is a footballer that thrives off talent around him. Pedro Neto, a fit Cunha, a fit Hwang. When you've got those players in and around you that can make him look good. And I think one of the comments earlier on was saying Pablo Sarabia plays wide for Spain. Well, there's a little bit of difference then. And I could see if you've got technical players at fullback in front of you and next to you, you can afford, because Spain still play that sort of tiki-taka football when they keep it, and you can do that. At Wolves, when you've got Matt Doherty on the other side and you've got a holding midfielder playing as a number 10, there's not really a lot to do there. But as Richard said with the question, I do have sympathy with Sarabia. But because of his demeanour sometimes, I think people think he looks like he doesn't care. And like, I don't ever see him coming off that pitch with anything left. He always, to me, looks like he's knackered. But he's not quick. And he just looks a little bit lethargic.
Yeah, I mean, I've been critical of Sarabia, but I don't blame him for performances at the moment because of the issues we've got all around him. He's a player who needs people around that can play off him. He needs those intelligent footballers ahead of him. So you'll probably see an uplifting performances now that Hwang and Cunha are back, because they make those runs, they give him those options. And for me, I'd still want to see him playing a little bit more centrally. I think that's where he can affect the game. He's a luxury player, and Chris and I had that conversation at Forest on Saturday, that he's, if it's going well, he's a great player to have in your squad. And, you know, if you put him in a Man City or somebody like that, you'd see a really clever footballer because of those options that he's got around him. Whereas for us at the moment, he's kind of a luxury that we probably can't afford because of the situation we're in. But at the same time, there's no other option instead of him. So we're kind of stuck. But as long as he's putting in 100% and he's playing for the shirt, which I do firmly believe he is, then, you know, I'm not going to complain about his performances, because he's badly affected by what's around him. And as much as Nathan Fraser's a young lad who's developing, and I'm sure will have a career in the game, I don't know what level that'll be, but he'll have a career in the game, he's not the kind of player who's going to make those runs that allows a Sarabia to find that space and drop into those pockets and really perform at the level that we know he can do. So he's paying a price for the injuries, I'm afraid. But he's the only option we got, so we've got to stick with him.
Tyler, on the subject of Pablo Sarabia, do we feel that still, this happens at most football clubs, that there has to be a scapegoat when it's going wrong? And does it feel that sometimes when it's not going well, that at the moment that might be Pablo Sarabia?
I think he's just one of those players that isn't appreciated, you know, for the reasons that Nock has just mentioned, and me as well. You know, he's not a Joe Gomez that's going to cover every blade of grass. It's just not his game. And like you said, he can look a bit lethargic and lazy. So I think there's probably always someone. Like I said, I don't understand it at all. You know, you're not going to change a player of his age, 30, 31, to be smashing into people and winning tackles and getting the crowd going, because it's just not him. You know, as you know, I'm a fan of his, but, you know, I'd be having that conversation next season, really, if he is part of the squad. Because I think at the start of the season, he wasn't getting a look in under O'Neill. And I think O'Neill likes this pacey, you know, rapid football. Then he might not fit into it necessarily. So I think there's a conversation to be held on him for sure. But I think Richard hits the nail right on the head there with that question. He couldn't suit up any better for me.
Richard, thank you for being part of the Wolves Report. Great contribution as well from Noki and Tyler. Wayne, watching all the way from Australia, I think, do you think Fosun will finally invest in the squad numbers we need to stay competitive throughout a whole season? I'll start off that one. What I would say is, Wayne, is that Fosun have invested a lot of money. They've just not invested it very well. I mean, you look at the with this £35 million prodigy that was supposed to be the next best thing. I was desperate for him to come good. Put my neck on the line a bit there, look a bit silly now, but maybe that was me just wanting to do well. We all wanted Goncalo Guedes to come to Wolves for a long time. Didn't look like he wanted to be here. Daniel Pedence, or no, I think people, most people on this podcast would wish he was back at Wolves now. Yes, he's a little ratter and he's annoying and he does things to frustrate you, but he's a match winner. Look at his goal at Forest last season, touch cut inside, bang. We haven't got anybody at the moment. Daniel Pedence probably starts the last four or five games for Wolves. So, yeah. And you look at Sasa Kalajic, you put all those players, let's say those transfers worked, and I think someone put this, one of you boys put this on the group chat, let's say that was our, you put Guedes, you put Pedence, you put Fabio, those three in the team with Cunha this weekend just gone, that team looks very different. And I know you might say that about not having Fabio, but if he's at Wolves at the moment, he's probably starting. Whether you like it or not, you don't rate him. I think he's a little bit better than Nathan Fraser's at the moment. And I think there's a place for him in the team ahead of Matt Doherty, a wing-back playing out of position. So I think Fosun have invested. I just think some of the decisions they've made have been terrible, Wayne. And particularly when you go back, like, with a Adama Traore, decisions like that that I just couldn't make any sense of. So I know they've said there'll be a different approach this summer. There will be money to spend, but I guess the more we sell, the more it will generate. Probably looks like Neto plus one. There's talk today of Man City being in for eight Nouri. But we shall see. Yeah, just your guys following up, please, on Wayne's question. Noki?
Yeah, we're self-sufficient. It's a self-sufficient model. So it's not about folks and investing. It's about what we can sell. So I think we'll clear out a lot of the fringe players. I think some of the younger kids will probably go. Kundal will probably go. Hodge will probably go. And then you've got your players who were out on loan, we can't afford to send them out on loan again. So Guedes, Silva, they've all got to go. And then you probably sell one, maybe two of your big hitters. I think Neto will go. He's an asset we can't afford to carry because of his injuries. And if City are in for eight Nouri, then that's, you know, that's probably going to happen. But there's no reason Wolves can't draw up $150 million in fees to strengthen the squad and hopefully the team as well. It's just how much of that they're then willing to reinvest into the side. So we'll see. But in terms of Fosun bankrolling us, that's absolutely not going to happen. If we're going to spend, it has to be what we bring in ourselves. It's not going to be from Fosun.
Any follow-up on that, Tyler?
No.
While we're on that subject, this is a really good one that'll create a little bit of debate, and you can follow on a little bit more in depth on what we've talked about. Steve Lee's asked, time to look at who stays and who goes ahead of next season. Any thoughts?
I sent the list to Steve on Twitter, and I think he seem to agree with most of it. I'm trying to load the squad up now, but
yeah, I've got it in front of me. So let's just go through it then. Jose Sarr, I think if Jose Sarr statistically has improved, but with a goalkeeper, if you make a mistake, it always gets highlighted because it usually ends in a goal. There was talk of him going to Saudi. If some big money comes in and he wants to go and Wolves get that, he could go. But for me, I'm okay with Jose Sarr being in goal again next year. I don't see that as a, I think we've got bigger problems in the squad than looking at him. Bentley is the backup. I'm not sure he's done a lot in the cup games. He's a concern for me, Noki.
Yeah, I think we're struggling goalkeeper wise. I saw King play as well, and he I don't think he's going to make it either. So I'd like to see another goalkeeper come in as a little bit of a challenge to Sarr, not just as a number two, someone who can maybe, as Chris has said before, not many of the players have got pressure on them. So it'd be nice to see someone come in and put a little bit of pressure on him.
Absolutely. Max Kilman, Tyler. Wolves turned down an alleged 30, 35 million from Napoli when they sold their main centre-back to Bayern Munich. I like Max. Is he a player that's going to play in a two? Because I think Gary wants to progress to potentially a two next year. Wolves get, I mean, I know Man United have talked, I mean, look at the state of Man United. Man United could pay huge money. So is 40 or 50 million too big an amount of money to turn down for Max Kilman?
I wouldn't sell him. I don't see any need to sell him. And I don't see who pays that money to buy him. I don't see him leaving myself. And again, he's not an area that I'm worried about. You know, I'd be clearing out some of the defensive deadwood well before him. I think Dawson's a concern, isn't he? As he gets mid-30s and injuries starting to creep in, you'd argue we need to probably get at least two centre-backs. So then if Kilman goes, I'd argue you need three. So I don't see that really being on the cards. If someone offers 40, 50 million pound, you can't turn it down though. I'd argue everyone's for sale. You know, like Knocker
said, I would say modern football, other than if you're Man City, I think everybody's for sale. Toti Gomez, currently valued on transfer market at 17 million. That's not something we'd say, but you know what?
That's 16.5 million too high, isn't it? But
he's always got to do it. I think Toti's been okay.
But that's it, Ryan. It's okay. He'll keep you 14th in the Premier League. And if that's your aspirations and that's your ambitions, fine. He doesn't get in the top half Premier League side.
No, he doesn't. And I don't see Toti going. We'll fly through these. Santiago Bueno. Don't see him
going. Played well Saturday, I thought.
He's not going to go.
And also, last but not least, I think we'll probably see Yerson Mosquera return. Now, Yerson's having a great time playing right back in La Liga. I don't really understand that. He must be a completely different footballer to the one Noki saw in the 21s final. But he's always had the physical attributes. He's been strong and he's quick. So, I mean, if you're playing right back in La Liga, you must have some technical ability because, and hopefully he comes back and he's the player that we invested in a few years ago. Dawson. So
just on Santi, that's the sort of business you should be looking to do. You're buying established international footballers that have earned their trade in Spain, Italy, and you're getting them for 10, 12 million pounds. Yeah. That's where the market for Wolves needs to be now. He looks a very accomplished footballer, and those players are out there.
Mm, absolutely. We talked about Dawson, he needs surgery. So whether he's in amongst it next season, don't be disrespectful to Dawes because he's been brilliant, but
he can't be our starting centre-back next season for me. No, I don't think he can be one of the two if we are going to go to a two. He can be in the squad, but for me, that's it. I think if he's still starting games for us, then we've not improved the squad and we've probably regressed.
Biggest concern for me next season is whether we lose Ryan Aitnori. And if he continues the form that he does, there's talk today that Man City have tried to hold talks with Wolves. I don't know how true that is or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if Man City, Paris Saint-Germain, because that kid is on another planet this season. He's playing incredible. He looks like he can beat anybody.
He's selling now then, yeah, but this is when you sell them. Because we talked about this again, we hold on to players for too long and we're not selling players at their peak. If their model is to sell players for that 70, 80 million pound bracket, now's the time to sell him because he's in his peak for us at the moment.
Is that the sort of thing you're talking?
Unless there was players coming the other way, I think he's that sort of level footballer. He's probably with Kuhn, like Noki said, the only real talent we've got is that he's the one player that you look at and, yeah, he could go and play for Man City at left-back or Liverpool at left-back without any issue. So I'd be wanting, especially if it was City, 70 million, but it will be less probably with a player or two, won't it? And, you know, we got worried when Johnny wasn't playing anymore and, you know, players come and go and I'd be confident in replacing him. You know, he's a bit of a one-off, but for that money, you can buy seven or eight players.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to have seen him have another season full blast. But like you said, if a stupid offer comes in, and I know they talked about Gomez coming away from Man City, he's got a great reputation on the fringes of the Spanish squad before he wasn't getting games at Man City. That for me is very, very interesting. Hugo Bruno's an interesting one, Noki. I'll just fly through him quickly. Lack of game time, it's hard to judge him, but it doesn't look like he's ready yet at the moment.
I think he stays, though. I mean, we sell him, what do we get, 3 million maybe for him? I don't think you get a great deal of money. So I think as a backup and then a player who's developing, I don't see any reason to get rid of him.
Fly through these now, Tyler, as time's through. Nelson Semedo, He's 30. If anyone deserves a new contract, for me, it's Nelson Semedo. And the problem is, when you've got someone that good, I mean, 30 is not that old in a professional footballer anymore. What would it cost to replace Nelson Semedo, number one? And number two, would they be anywhere near as good, and could we afford it? I don't think that we could. If Nelson's happy, for me, I think he needs an extension. Come the summer, he's got 12 months left on his contract.
Well, yeah, but like I've just touched upon, no one's irreplaceable. He's a good, solid right-back, right-wing-back. I wouldn't sell him. I'd certainly be keeping him. He's one of the senior pros at the club now. I'd be more worried about Doherty, who's got 2 years left and is just going to sit there and take
his pay back. Tell us about Doherty.
No one's going to take him, are they?
2 years left on his deal. No one's going to take him. He's not pushing Semedo. It was a bit of a silly buy, you know. I'd have given him a year at the start of the season, but to get
three years was an interesting one. I don't know if Wolves were desperate. I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to Matt, because the year we got promoted and the next 2 years after that, he was fantastic before he went to Spurs. He had that hybrid role. He was making goals. He was scoring goals. Doesn't look like that player anymore. Can't really say he never stops, because he never lets us down, and he's been played out of position.
He's a solid squad player, but yeah, that's all he is.
Nocky, moving on to Mario Lemina. I think we both agree there. He isn't going absolutely anywhere. He looks reborn from his, like, he's sort of refired up his career again since he's come back to the Premier League. He looks genuinely happy at Molineux.
It's like Chris said, those are the deals you'd be doing. I mean, he was, what, 9 million quid? So that's the kind of market we can be looking in. And you're not going to sell him. I mean, he's going to be nudging 30 now, hasn't he? So you're not going to get much more than you paid for him. It's going to cost you a hell of a lot more to replace his quality. So, no, I don't see any reason to get rid.
Tyler, just a quickie on Boubacar Traoré. I don't think Gary O'Neill fancies him. He talks him up a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if that's someone that goes out the door in the summer. When we joined him, he had the second or third best pressing stats in European football. However, I'm not sure he's the kind of midfielder that he trusts. So I wouldn't be. I know there was some interest in him in Germany in the last window. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes. A shame, but if the manager doesn't fancy him, there's no point keeping him.
I think from the midfield options, you're selling Boubacar Traoré, Joe Hodge, Luke Kundal. You're selling those three. You presume Doyle's coming in the other way.
No brainer at 4.5.
That gives you three with Gomez. So again, you're too short, aren't you? So for me, I would like to see another quality centre midfielder brought into the club.
Absolutely. Joe Gomez, Nocky, somebody that's has been attracting attention. But Wolves aren't in a position now where they're desperate to sell. I think we all know that Neto's going, and that gives Wolves the budget for a reasonable sum with the money they have anyway, plus the Guedes and the Fabios. So for me, Joe Gomez, quite often in the best performances, the heartbeat of the team with Mario. I'll be sad to see him go this summer.
Yeah, we talk about players at their peak when we need to sell him. He's not at his peak yet. You get another season out of him, and I think you'll have even bigger offers coming in for him the next year. So it'd be brainless to sell him now.
Jean-Luc Bellegarde, we signed, actually played a lot of his career in centre midfield, but seemed to play in more forward positions, played wide, played as a 10, played as a false nine. We never really got to see him in midfield, so maybe he's one of those centre midfielders options. Clearly, he's talented. I know, again, me and Tyler aren't on the same page with this. I see there's a footballer there, but we haven't really seen a lot of it yet. Hopefully, he's not going to go anywhere. So hopefully he's part of the squad next season. Tommy Doyle, 4.5 million. It's a no-brainer. We can go past him. Noah Lamina, development player. Looks like he can beat a man in the 21s in the last game until he got injured. Gonzalez, again, development player. Pedro Neto, Nocky. Been a player this season, but I think we've seen him for the last time in a Wolf shirt.
Yeah, I'd sell him. If he'd have carried on the form he had, I think you'd be looking 80-odd million for him. Now you're going to be lucky to get 45, 50 because of his injury problems. So he's an asset that we're carrying, who, when he's on form, is fantastic, but you can't rely on him to be on the pitch. So for me, you get rid and you get as much money as you can for him. As much as he's been great for us this season, I've thoroughly enjoyed him. We're not big enough squad to be carrying a player of that quality. So, yeah, get him gone.
What I would say about Pedro, though, Nocky, is if he, say, went to a Arsenal, he would be in a side where he could be used sparingly and they could protect him. They protect a lot of their players because if you've got a squad when you've got two, I mean, maybe Martinelli, Trossard, Saka, that have some very, very good players, he probably gets on their bench and he's part of their squad, but he's somebody that you could use sparingly and protect. Unlike, I think Gary O'Neill said he could have took him off after an hour and protect him more, but we're not in the position to do that. So yeah, I think at a bigger team, he gets more minutes over a season because he's not strained as much as he is at Wolves. Shame, but...
He'll excel, and people will say it was the wrong decision to get rid of him, but he's not going to hit them levels at Wolves because we'll flog him to death like we're doing with the rest of the team. So for me, it's a no-brainer. If you can get anywhere near 50 million for him, you just take it.
Absolutely. Tyler, I'm sorry to break your heart, but let's talk about Pablo Sarabia.
I'll probably sell him.
Not because
I don't rate him as a footballer, but I just don't see him long-term in O'Neill's plans, and I don't see him getting any better than he already is for Wolves. So,
what do you get for him, though?
Probably not a lot. You might get your money back. You know, I was having a bit of a Twitter thing about, you know, we've not got our money's worth. We've got a return and some on Sarabia. You know,
£5 million. £5 million. He's got double figures, goal contributions. It's a no bad.
If you get your money back, I think I can see him going back to Spain or Italy because that league, they're more suited to his football style.
Yeah, I think you put the nail on the head there. Earlier on in the season, when everyone was fit, he wasn't getting a look in for Gary O'Neill because he wanted fast players. It was not balls over the top, but direct, straightforward passes, exploding, getting forward. Yeah, picking up and going, and he doesn't suit that. But what I would say, credit to him for when he's come in, because he's put some great corners in, crosses in, he scored a brilliant goal v Spurs, and he deserves respect because any player playing in midfield or wide that gets double figures goal returns for assists and goals deserves credit because it's the Premier League. So respect to him for that, although I do think he'll go. Mateus Cunha, Wolves paid 50 or whatever it was, unless something stupid comes in. I don't see, for me, this someone looks like... With him and Mario, they're captains without the armband. Mateus Cunha is very much, for me, the big cog in the Wolves machine at the moment.
I think it's quite simple with him. You build the team around him next season. Not a chance now. I'll be looking to sell him.
Absolutely not. Tyler, Hwang Ki-chan, rated on Transfer Market, 25 million. Now, before Hwang Ki got injured, you'd have to say he was playing the best he played before he came back from the Asia Cup because he struggled a bit then. But before he went to that tournament, performances away at Brentford, scoring great goals, playing a little bit more centrally, it suited him. But options are thin. So do we really sell Hwang Ki-chan?
I do, yeah. He doesn't contribute enough over a 90-minute game of football. Finishing, nobody could question. Ball falls in the box. Probably want it to fall to him, but I don't know for me if he contributes enough. However, every manager that we've had here likes him, rates him, plays him. So I'll trust O'Neill on that one. It's not for me to say, but if someone's giving me £25 million, I'm taking it and looking to improve.
I think we could fair to describe him as an impeccable professional. Keeps his head down. He's ridiculously unselfish for the team. Tracks back, works hard. Great pro to have around. Seems popular amongst the squad, the coaches. Good pro. If he's here next season, great. I mean, we've criticised him here for a long time in terms of if he doesn't score in a game, you don't really see him. I did think he improved on that just before he was going to the Asia Cup. I think you were seeing more in-game contributions, holding the ball up, linking the play. He was doing that better. Went to the Asia Cup, come back, and he looked like the Hwang from a year ago. So hopefully he can come back and make an impact at the end of the season. Guedes, I think we all agree, is gone. Fabio, I think, is gone. Sasha, I mean, I just hope the guy gets back to some playing again, but it's his third one. That's very, very unfortunate. Interesting one, though, last but not least for me. Well, we've got two more interesting ones. Daniel Podence. Now, he's such a frustrating footballer, but somebody that can unlock the door, guys. He's somebody that can get the ball. I mentioned the Forest goal earlier on. That bit of magic, that flick or the trick. He's not afraid to get criticised for flicking and flicking. But when it works, there's a goal. And at the moment, there isn't anybody in the squad or in the team that's doing that.
I'll keep him, but he's absolutely gone. You won't see him
He'll go.
I think there's five. I think they're going to get a bargain. 5 million, I think, was the deal if they decide to him. And the really interesting one we talked about earlier on is Yerson Mosquera. Doing well in Spain, different league, but bossed it in the MLS. I'd expect him to do that. Gone to Spain, playing as a hybrid Ben White right back. I mean, I hope he is turned into as good as Ben White right back. I'd certainly be very happy with that. I'm not sure he has, but I think we'll see him pre-season. Nathan Fraser, I think he'll get a loan next year. Chiwoma, I think he'll get a loan as well. Anyone else I've missed off from loans on that list? I think that's it, isn't it?
The only other one to question, does he come back, is Hoover at Stoke, isn't it? I've yet to see a player there, but does he come back as your second choice right back? I don't know.
I think they'll look to offload him, to be honest. He's not really set the world on fire at Stoke this season, has he? So I think he'll be gone.
The one thing I've got in his favour is he's young and he's quick. And Wolves don't really... Wolves have been very, very fortunate with Nelson Semedo. And I would say he's better... If he comes back, he's second choice already. And I don't know if that says a lot for the squad depth, but I would certainly have him in terms of a like-for-like, having pace and the energy to get up and down. He's your next one to play right wing back. Probably not as solid as Doherty, but in terms of his physical attributes, the ability to get up and down and that. So I think he's had a decent and okay season at Stoke, caught a couple of goals from right back as well. So Steve Lees, your question took a big part of the show, and I'm glad it did, to try and keep us away from VAR for a change, but I couldn't help myself. Saturday evening, weird kickoff, 7:30 at Molineux. Wolverhampton Wanderers take on Arsenal, who drew 2-2 with Bayern Munich and then lost 2-0 to Aston Villa at the Emirates. They play Bayern Munich again on Wednesday for the return leg. It could be a really good time to play them, Nocky, but it could be a really bad time to play them as well.
You're going to laugh, but I fancy us.
Oh, wow.
I do. I've got a little sneaky for this one. I don't know what it is.
Almost a little sneaky against Arsenal. Couldn't beat Burnley, couldn't beat Forest. Got a sneaky beat Arsenal.
All my sneakies have been way off this season, so we'll see how that one turns out. But I don't know. I've just got a little feeling they have to beat us. They're going to come at us. They're going to really push us, and I think we're going to have a little bit over the top and on the break, and they're going to probably lose to Bayern Munich.
You're going to feed Matt Doherty and behind the centre-backs, Tyler.
I just got a sneaky. I don't know what it is. I think we're going to win it.
Oh, I really hope
There's no science behind it, but we'll probably get stuff 5-0, but I've just got a little feeling.
Tyler, this fame's absolutely gone to his head. Tyler, your take on Wolves game ahead to face Arsenal?
I'll just play the kids and rest everyone. It's pointless.
Try and play Bournemouth on Wednesday. We've got Bournemouth on Tuesday or Wednesday afterwards.
I think the season's done, isn't it? It's over. And I'm saying it a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but also with a serious element to it. I mean, why not have a look at Boubacar Traoré for the next six games? Give him a run of games, see what he's got. Same for Tommy Doyle. Say to me, you've got 6 or 7 games, show me what you've got. You know, Hugo Bueno, if Aiton Lowry's not fit, I'd play him. I know the options aren't endless, but let's have a look at those players. I think Arsenal beat us, whatever team we put out. They're just too good. And I know I thought Villa were very good and they slipped up there, but they'll beat us. I mean, we can't keep clean sheets at Forest and Burnley, so they'll have a field day, I think.
Absolutely. On the weekend, Crystal Palace went and won at Anfield, so stranger things have happened. Even though I'm with you, Tyler, I think Arsenal were very good in the first half against Villa, and they just ran out of gas 60 minutes. And credit to Villa, they did a job on them and then hit them at the end. And you've got to say Villa deserved to win that in the end. Got to doff your hat when it happens, haven't you? Nocky, you said a couple of weeks ago you'd gone with the 3 spoilers in there. I'm not sure that's the word that you use. We use that Villa
Park. 3 stinkers, I think it was.
Yeah, 3 stinkers in it across. Is this the kind of game that we're going to see a 5-3-2, or because the season's gone now, do we just be a little bit tuck in and then look to counter?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to take them on, are you? You're going to make it as tight and compact as you can. It's probably going to be pretty similar to Forest, I would think. Huang's not going to be fit enough to start, so I think Cunha will start and then probably get another 65, 70 minutes, depending on how much running he has to do. And then Huang probably comes on for the last sort of 20 minutes to build him up as well. So it'll be 3 at the back. It'll probably be 3 midfield, but a bit of a hybrid with one of them pushing forward, whether it's Lamina or Gomez, and then 2 up front for me.
On a serious note, Tyler, you talked about sort of rotating from what limited we've got, but if you look at it from a business point of view, are Wolves more likely to beat Arsenal or beat Bournemouth? And is that a way the club will be looking at it, or they'll be thinking, actually, no, we've got to stay true and honourable here and do our best for the integrity of the league on Saturday and play our strongest team?
I don't think O'Neill will care too much about that, really. For me, it doesn't make any difference, really. The season's done, isn't it? If we don't win another game, we'll probably finish about 13th anyway. You know, it's irrelevant, isn't it, I think? I'd just like to have a look at some of these players, see what they've got about them. That would just be my opinion. But again, I think it doesn't matter. There's the argument, if Nouri is back and Kuhn is back, Wang potentially more games, Sarabi, there's an argument that you would get chances, like Nocky says, we could cause them problems, but I think whatever team you put out, they'll have too much for us.
Absolutely. An interesting conundrum, even though I think I know the answer already. Is it worth rolling the dice to potentially see if, say, Huang's fit to start, to have Huang, Ait Nouri and Cunha up front, having a real go at it? Is it worth the sacrifice then to have Doherty or Bueno at left back? Or if Ait Nouri's back, does he come to left back? Because Ait Nouri at the moment is playing with the freedom of Wolverhampton. He can beat anybody and do what he pleases. So is it let's just go for it. Let's go with a forward line that can damage people. Or would you bring Ait Nouri back to left wing back?
I personally would have him at left wing back if he was fit and available. Now Sarabia and Kuhn is there, plus one other. I'd play him at left wing back myself.
You've got Saka as well, haven't you?
You can't have Saka running at Doherty, can you? I mean, Christ. They'd have to put it on after 9 o'clock, let alone half seven.
We're coming to the end of episode 96. I am absolutely dreading these predictions, but not from Nocky, though, because Nocky's got a sneaky. Nocky, your predictions ahead of Wolverhampton Wanderers v Arsenal.
2-0 Wolves. Chao Gomez with the first, then Huang off the bench, bang, nods in 2-0.
Nocky's clearly got a job where you can drink during the daytime, Tyler.
I think 3-1 to Arsenal. I think that'll just be very comfortable.
Probably tight that, to be fair.
Nocky,
can't keep a clean sheet, can we? So
absolutely. And Nocky, my prediction, please.
Well, you're going to go 1-0 and Cunha, aren't you?
This has been episode 96 of the Wolves Report. Thank you to Chris, Tyler, Mark Nock, and I'm your host, Ryan Lester. Hopefully we'll speak to you next week after we've got 6 points from Arsenal and Bournemouth. Pardon? Up the Wolves.